You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast, episode 79. This is Mikey Campbell back from the dead. With me today, Neil Hughes, managing editor, appleinsider.com. How's it going, Neil?
Hey, Mikey. It's going pretty well.
Awesome. So, big news this week. Of course, Apple's fiscal third quarter earnings came out. Beat street estimates, of course not not as good as some investors would like, but you know, 40 million iPhones. What do you think?
I mean, sales are still declining, and that is a point of concern on Wall Street, where all they're interested in is growth. But the share price went up after earnings by about $6. Because analysts were expecting results to be worse than they were. They came in a little bit better. There was some good and some bad. I mean, obviously, you still have iPhone sales declining. But one of the strong points, actually, is even though iPad sales were down by a little bit, the average selling price increased by like $100 or something. And they actually saw their revenue increase, even though they sold fewer units. So that is a direct effect of the 9.7-inch iPad Pro launching in March. So you're seeing now that Apple's making a push for more of the premium tablet market, even more premium than before, really, considering you can get some of these Amazon tablets for like $50 now or whatever it is. They're really pushing for that $500-plus market, and I would not be surprised if the iPad mini does not get updated as frequently, because I don't think Apple's really interested in the unit sales growth at this point as much as they are finding ways to make it a formidable laptop replacement and profitable high margin business for them.
Interesting, because the mini kind of carried iPad for a little while there when the full size sales kind of flagged. Well, maybe early 2015 or so.
Yeah, I think that really the iPad is something where Apple is still trying to figure out what it is. Certainly the hardware is excellent. The software is lacking in many ways. We've talked about that before, where Apple really needs to do more to increase productivity and things on the iPad. But slowly but surely, they're getting there. That's one of the biggest disappointments, I think, with the iOS 10 announcement at WWDC, is there really wasn't anything specifically for iPad that was announced that was really meaningful. And when you compare that to iOS 9 and all the features that it added for iPad, that really made it feel like a big update for iPad. One of the rumors that I had read about was that Apple's saving iPad-specific stuff for 10.1 and 10.2. It is sometimes frustrating for Apple, for as large as they are, to be such a singularly focused company that they can't, you know, juggle a few things at once. But yeah, I'm hopeful to see more emphasis on the software front going forward with the iPad. But it's as someone who is a big fan of my iPad Pro, I have the 12.9-inch model. It's good news to see that things are turning around on the business stand front for Apple. And that was really, I think, the biggest bright spot for them this last quarter.
Yeah, a lot of people are also talking about services growth. I mean, it's been growing fairly consistently over the past few quarters. And I think people are just kind of now catching on to the fact that that's happening. I mean, it's always been growing.
This was a big narrative that Apple pushed earlier in the year when they were forecasting a decline, the first ever decline in iPhones. This has been the story that they want to tell. And it's an interesting story and it's a good story. But I mean, the amount of money they make on their services is still so minuscule. Again, this is all relative, because Apple said during this week's call that the size of their services business is growing so fast that it will be the size of a Fortune 100 company next year, which is incredible when you think about it. But it also shows the difference between the haves and the have-nots, because Apple is such a big company that this services revenue, when compared to what the iPhone does for them, is a drop in the bucket. Really, Apple's quarterly earnings are all iPhone. That's really what it is. The Mac and the iPad, yeah, whatever. But as the iPhone goes, so does Apple.
And this quarter was 40.4 million.
Are you eating?
No. Yes? Look, I live a very busy lifestyle, okay? I eat when I can.
Anyhow, the average selling price of the iPhone dropped to under $600 this last quarter, and that's really as a result of the success of the iPhone SE, which has sold more than Apple expected. They don't break down by unit, but certainly the iPhone SE has driven down the average selling price, but the margins remain strong, coming in at 38% on the quarter, which was a little better than they had expected on Wall Street.
Yeah.
But yeah, the services revenues last quarter grew 19%, mm-hmm. And they expect to continue growing. And it's a big part of Apple's business, but it's just not going to move the needle like the iPhone does.
On the on the iPhone on SE thing, I was looking at taking a look at the SEC filing, the 10Q, and I noticed that I mean, it's not like a huge watermark or anything, but I noticed that the iPhone fell below 60% of total revenue for the first time since, I think, December quarter 2014.
Huh, interesting.
So, I mean, not you know, I mean, it usually hovers around 63. I think it got up to like 67% or something, but
mm-hmm.
it's kind of, you know, it's in the 50s now. It's going back down. Maybe it'll be only a half of Apple's money-making product line in the near future. Who knows?
I mean, you know, they announced this week that they reached 1 billion iPhones sold.
That they did.
And that is a incredible achievement. But, I mean, they are selling so many iPhones. And at $600 a pop, I mean, people talk about what is going to be the next thing for Apple, what is going to be their next product. I don't think that it's possible to create a product that will sell that many at that price. I mean, computers have not been that big. Certainly wearables are not going to get that big. No car is going to be that big. The amount of money that's bringing in, the sheer volume of phones that are being sold, and Apple will continue to sell, is kind of an insurmountable thing. If you're looking for the next big thing, I think you're looking wrong. I think, you know, the iPhone was certainly a great product that came around at the right place, right time. But I don't think it would be very, very difficult to have a device come out, a new category of device, that would be as big as the iPhone. I would be shocked if they were able to do something like that. The iPhone is a once-in-a-lifetime type of device.
Apple glasses? Come on, man.
Right.
Think big.
I mean, what's your best-case scenario, right? I mean, iPads peaked at like 25 million in a quarter, which is pretty impressive considering it's a PC replacement, essentially. The Mac has never hit more than like 5.5 million, I think. I don't think they've ever hit 6 million on the Mac. The watch, I mean, what's the best you're going to do on the watch? 10, 15 million in a quarter.
Maybe.
You know, if they could drop the watch to $200 and, you know, integrate GPS, you know, in the next 4 or 5 years, I could see them selling like 15 million of those in a quarter. But are you really going to push beyond that? Is there a market? Can you get to a point where you're selling 75 million watches in a quarter?
Well, no. I mean, you have to create a market. I mean, they basically built the smartphone market. There was a market before it, but it wasn't a strong
right.
one. They made the smartphone market. I mean, they'd have to make it. This is more, investors are kind of thinking about disruption, but I think that to get to iPhone levels again, they're going to have to go more towards creation, market creation. And I don't think that there's anything out there. I mean, of course, I sound like the people in the early 1900s who said everything that could be invented has already been invented. But I mean, I don't know. The iPhone was based on mobile computing and communications, and I don't know. I don't see anything that can be so widely accepted and, you know, widely needed right now.
I could
like
see
watches, but they don't necessarily need a smartwatch per se.
If you had a smartwatch with its own LTE radio, and it allowed you to leave your phone at home, how often would you leave your phone at home? Would you still bring your phone with you?
Well, yeah, no doubt, because, I mean, it's for a smartphone, it's not just a communications device. It's also a gaming device. It's also a way for me to check in on news and stuff. I just can't do that kind of stuff with a 1.5-inch screen. It's just not something that I want to do.
Right. I can see that. You know, if I'm going out with friends or something like that, the biggest thing I think would be the detriment of leaving my phone at home would be losing the camera to take pictures and stuff like that if I'm going to an event or whatever. The texting, of course, you could replace that, at least in very basic ways, on a watch, wearable, making phone calls, you know, getting alerts, that kind of stuff. I think there's something liberating about leaving your phone at home, and I'm excited for a potential future where my watch is not something so dependent on the iPhone and kind of something that can stand on its own.
You've been watching too much Dick Tracy, my friend.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about, because right now I'm running my iPhone 6S with iOS 10 for work purposes, obviously, so I can write about the betas and stuff. And I miss using my iPhone SE, but I didn't want to put iOS 10 beta on there because the iPhone SE doesn't have 3D touch, so I couldn't test out those features for work purposes. But I've been thinking, you know, because I'll have to get the iPhone 7 when it comes out to review that for work and stuff like that too. And I was thinking it would be nice just to be able to switch between phones. And the watch prevents me from doing that. You know, if I didn't have the watch, I could just pop out the SIM card. iCloud keeps everything synced between devices and apps and all that kind of stuff. Wouldn't really be that big of a deal. But there is no way currently to easily switch your watch from one phone to another. You have to de-pair it from the phone, which then backs it up to the phone. Then you have to pair it with the other phone. And then you lose all the stuff you backed up on the other phone, and it's like crazy. That's one of those things. I feel like it's kind of like the early days of the iPad, where you needed to connect it to a computer in order to set it up, which seems like the dark ages now when you think about it. But I think that's one of those things that in the next couple of years, hopefully they'll be able to address, because it would be nice. Like, you think about this iPhone 7 Plus coming out, it's going to have this really cool dual lens camera on it. You know, that's a really cool feature, but I don't want to carry around a giant phone all the time. It would be nice to, if I had a phone that had those capabilities and I could use it on occasion, that would be nice. I realize that we're talking about like insane, nerdy, luxury stuff here of owning multiple phones and all that, but you know, I think it's all in Apple's best interest to be able to sell more devices. Why not?
I mean, you can, how many, what is there a max to how many watches you can pair with one phone? Because I know they obviously expanded that to beyond one, right? But is there a cap on that?
I have no idea. I have not tried.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd want to do that.
They've made it a lot easier with watchOS 3. Like, for example, you go on there, and it shows your watch with the current face on it, and it has the case design around the outside of it. So you can very, very quickly tell if you have multiple watches which one is which, and then you can switch between them. And that's one of those things where I could see, like, for example, let's say that a new watch comes out this year. You already own the stainless steel one, right?
Yep.
So let's say a new watch comes out this year, and it's got GPS, and you really want that. But you want to keep your stainless steel watch because it still works, and maybe you're going out for a nice night wearing a suit or something and it matches better. I could easily see a scenario where somebody keeps last year's watch and then buys this year's, and they use them for two different purposes. You might want to get the cheapest model just to get GPS. You might want to keep the stainless steel one because it looks nicer. So yeah, that ability to switch between watches makes sense. So why not give me the same ability to switch between phones?
True. They'd have to do a lot of... I think, well, for one thing, the watch would have to be much more autonomous, right? They'd have to...
Yeah.
Which is kind of what they're moving to, but very slowly.
It's battery and processing power, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I think maybe authentication and security, I think they're possibly worried about that, the implications of the watch, you know, being able to connect to multiple devices and being authenticated on multiple devices is kind of scary for them.
So here's a question for you. Apple likes to introduce technology on one device and then gradually bring it to others. We've seen that many times. One of the big features that was introduced in the Apple Watch and eventually came to other devices was Force Touch, known as 3D Touch, on the phone. Do you think that the first place that we will get an in-screen Touch ID is on the iPhone or on the watch?
I would think the more logical thing would be for the watch, obviously, since there's like zero screen real estate.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, from what I've seen, as far as, you know, other companies and startups and stuff, that technology is not, I don't know, it's kind of thick. It's not something that would fit well in a space constrained device like the watch, but theoretically I would probably want it in watch, right? I mean, is it their only current device that does not have Touch ID mobile? It is, right? I think so.
In terms of mobile devices, yeah. I mean, unless you want to count an iPod or something.
No. iPod. They still sell
iPod,
those?
Who needs that?
Yeah. So it is coming. I would think that, yeah, I think we heard rumors about it being integrated into the digital crown. Mm-hmm. And there's some space in there, right? I mean, that's kind of dead space.
Yeah, that would be a very interesting way of doing it. I think because it's so small, mm-hmm. the scan area of the finger would be tiny. I don't know if that would hurt the accuracy of it.
Probably. I mean, they could enlarge the digital crown a little bit, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think they might get a good read on that from the, or maybe stick it on the side somewhere. With that ridiculous side button that is finally getting good use now.
Yeah, it's so much better with WatchOS 3. It's awesome.
Oh, God, contacts. Contacts and Apple Pay. Two things. One pretty useless for me, which is contacts on Apple Watch. And
yeah.
Apple Pay, it's not widely available where I live. So that button got little to no use with OS 1 and OS 2.
Did you see there was a rumor that we actually passed on, or it wasn't a rumor, it was a patent, of adding the digital crown to an iPad? And I was like, what?
Yeah, no.
The entire purpose of the digital crown is scrolling and being able to view content. And I do that all the time. If I'm doing something on my watch and I'm reading something or flipping through it, you just instinctively scroll with the crown because it's easier, less movement, and also you aren't obscuring the content. But the nice thing about having an iPad with all that real estate is you are not obscuring the content when you're touching the screen. There's plenty of room there.
Yeah.
There would be no use for that, even on an iPhone.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a bunch of patents about digital crown. I think I saw one that also allowed it to be used with like a laptop, which is, I mean, ridiculous. It would be akin to having multiple touchpads on, and one that only works in two dimensions, or one dimension, actually.
One thing that did come out this week, though, that we've heard a few times that it sounds plausible to me, although I will wait to see how it's implemented, is the idea that the home button on this year's iPhone won't move. It'll actually simulate the feeling of a click, much like the Force Touch trackpad does on a MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I could definitely see
and
that.
And a 12-inch MacBook. I could see it, but you would need a very tiny localized motor in the home button
actually
to make it feel like you pressed it.
Actually, well, yeah. But, I mean, they did a really good job simulating the click with the Force Touch pad, right?
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. So
Victor was using this MacBook for a year, yeah, and didn't realize that it didn't click. Yeah. That's how good it is.
That's good stuff. But then again,
when you go back to a trackpad that clicks, you can definitely feel the difference.
Right.
If you go back, you're like, oh, this kind of moves, and it just feels different. It's one of those things where when you move forward to the Force Touch trackpad, you don't really notice it, but when you move back, you notice it.
Yeah, it's your brain, man, playing tricks on you.
I think the Force Touch trackpad is absolutely incredible. I think it's one of the most ingenious things that Apple has done in the last 5 years, frankly. It's very impressive. And I think that if they can get something that works just as well on the home button on an iPhone, I'm all for it. But I remain skeptical until I try it, because that's one of those you got to feel it to know it things. And I was very skeptical about the Force Touch trackpad, and I'm a big fan, so I have faith in Apple to do it right. But it is a very interesting idea that really paves the way for thinner phones, waterproof phones, and also potentially just getting rid of the home button entirely.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to get rid of the button anytime soon, but I could see them modifying it. The assembly itself is quite big, right? Right. When everything else in the phone is getting so small. I mean, they're going to get rid of the headphone jack, supposedly. And that's super old technology. And the button is kind of, the way that Apple implemented it, is kind of in a weird place, right? It's right above the Lightning connector. Mm-hmm. And when you're slimming down phones, there's really no, I mean, you can't really play with, there's not really much leeway in terms of where you can cram components and stuff, especially on the peripheral peripheries of a device where they have like speakers and microphones and all that kind of good stuff. So I don't know. I could definitely see the capacitive home button coming, but I don't think it will be this year.
Does it feel to you like we have the full picture of what this phone is going to be? I mean, there's a story this week saying it's going to be called the iPhone 6 SE. The general consensus is that it won't be called the iPhone 7 because it's not a big enough upgrade. But it feels like something about this feels like it has a piece missing. I can't put my finger on it. I don't really know what it is. We know what the phone's going to look like. We have a general idea of what it's going to do. But something just doesn't feel right. Am I wrong there?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the sources of these leaks. To me, it seems like there's leaks that are coming out that have been floating around for, I don't know, almost a year. And then there's stuff that's more recent, right? And
right.
People keep re-reporting and regurgitating this stuff. Like, it's new leaks, which kind of muddies the situation. Like, is the phone going to have a headphone jack or not? Is it going to have smart connector? Like, some of these things, we know Apple makes a huge number of iterations of a product before taking it to production. So, you know, what if these early leaks are some of the prototype models that have, you know, that were scrapped 6 months ago, but they just keep popping up in the news, kind of confusing people. Then again, then there's, you remember Apple used to make, phony prototypes, just, you know,
right.
Throw people all the scent. They haven't done that in a while because, you know, who cares when you're selling 40 million iPhones? You don't need to be so protective over your product. But they might, I don't know, maybe they're doing that again. Who knows? Yeah, but I do agree. There's something that we're not seeing yet, or there's something that Apple has in the works that we can't put a finger on it, I guess, or exactly what it is. What do you think?
I mean, at this point, we know the phone's going to look largely the same. It's going to ditch the headphone jack. This home button rumor is iffy, but we'll see if it pans out. It's expected it's going to have the same screen technology, same general look, all that kind of stuff. I mean, but there are so many things that they could do either on a software front or in terms of proprietary hardware that we just won't know until they make the announcement. Like, what if, and this is obviously extremely wishful thinking, but what if the chip in the next iPhone is some sort of huge breakthrough in terms of battery life? Obviously, screen technology is still one of those things that is going to be a hindrance to battery life, but what if they somehow manage to, you know, squeeze a bigger battery in because they got rid of the headphone jack and all that, and essentially double the iPhone? I mean, I don't know if that's the case, but that feels like one of those things that we may not even know up until the announcement, and the kind of, you know, little secret they can keep hidden up their sleeve until they start shipping the product.
Yeah, it reminds me of when they launched 3D Touch, you know, on the 6S. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one really saw that happen, and they integrated like a full haptics feedback system into an iPhone, which is not something small. I mean,
well, we knew that the phone was going to have 3D touch. We just didn't know what it was going to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm talking about like the haptic system, the, what do they call it? Not force feedback.
The taptic engine?
Taptic engine. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not just like a redesigned vibration motor. It's a complete standalone system that they developed on their own, produced on their own. It's not something small. So, I mean, you're saying something like that maybe could be in the work, something inside the phone that only the producer of that part, and I guess later in the production stage, whoever's assembling at Foxconn would know about.
But even if they're assembling it, you know, it may not look that much different or whatever. It's that marriage of hardware and software that makes Apple unique. We knew that the phone was going to have this Taptic engine and 3D Touch last year, but we didn't really know how Apple was going to implement it or what its value was going to be. Now, you can make the argument that a year later, we still don't really know because it's not very well used.
I use it at least once, maybe twice a week.
I am using it more in iOS 10, but I still
I only use it in iOS 10 because it forces me to.
I do not use it for the multitasking thing. I never got used to that swiping from the left side and pressing. I still double tap the home button for multitasking.
Well, it's not a consistent experience. Like, you might do it once, but the next time you do it, scroll back in Safari or something. it's not well implemented like its other uses. Like on the app stuff, the app shortcuts, I guess would be useful, but it basically is just like an app launcher, right? It doesn't really do anything. You need to go into the app itself, then, you know.
Well, with iOS 10, now you get widgets, so.
Yay, widgets.
So the same widgets that show up on the lock screen you can get from an app by just force pressing 3D touching on it. And then it'll pop up whatever data, so you don't have to actually open the app. I don't know how useful that is. I haven't really used that feature with 3D Touch, but that's one of those things where the software is going to continue to come together and the hardware capability is there, and maybe with this next iPhone, there's some sort of software breakthrough that we just won't know until Apple announces it, and we can't know. And that software breakthrough may require hardware in the phone.
Yeah. Yeah, Apple likes to do that. And we won't see it until the very... Well, it'll be obscured in the last beta, but maybe... recently, they've been pretty good about kind of ferreting out that stuff in the late betas.
Yeah, I think the most exciting thing dug up from the beta really is the dark mode UI that people have found.
You know what that means. It's time for OLED.
Probably not till next year, but yeah.
Next year, man.
What do you think they'll call this year's phone?
I don't think they'll call it the S. I don't think they'll bring the SE into the picture. Because unless they announce a second phone that no one is talking about, and that will be the flagship, and then all the leaks and stuff that we've been seeing are the iPhone 6 SE, which will launch alongside it. But that would mean Apple will have four new phones this year, which is probably not something that's going to happen. But I don't think it'll be the SE. I can see them calling it something else other than the 7, because it isn't really a design change.
I go both ways on that. I feel like they could just, because I mean, it's just branding, who cares? They could just stubbornly stick with 7 and say, all of these changes that we've made make for an entirely new... I mean, you know the marketing. You can hear Phil Schiller saying it now, right? Yeah. All these changes we made make for an entirely new phone experience. You've never experienced anything like this. This is a completely new generation of product, iPhone 7. I could see them doing that. Yeah.
What if they go... I mean, they could go 7 this year, and even if they do redesign next year, they can call it 8. They don't have to go 7S. Right. Kind of like, you know, iPhone to iPhone 3G... etc. Yeah.
Well, one of the rumors about next year's phone was that the new redesign is only going to apply to the 5.5-inch model.
Yeah, I could see that too, but only in the case that they are constrained on probably supplies of the OLED panels, which, I mean, you know, suppliers are still right now just trying to get their facilities up and running so they can handle something like that. We did cover, I think, LG. How much money did they infuse into their next gen?
$1.5 billion or something?
Yeah.
Everybody's prepping for these OLED screens. They want to expand production so that they can get in on Apple's supply chain. But the biggest OLED manufacturer in the world is Samsung. You got to think they're going to win most of the orders there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. But even so, didn't we cover someone's estimates as to... how much of the world's OLED supply Apple would devour if they were to implement an OLED screen in their flagship product? I think it was something...
We did have an IHS forecast today basically saying that Apple making an OLED phone will be the tipping point. They think that most phones shipped by 2020 will be OLED screens overtaking LCD.
It'd be kind of hard because Apple's going to corner the market, right, on all that stuff. No one's going to want to. I mean, if you have a choice of selling to Apple and Xiaomi, you're going to pick Apple. I mean, that's the same.
Well, but the idea is, you know, between all the companies out there, Sharp, Samsung, you know, all these, this LG, all the display makers ramp up production, then they can, you know, meet a global demand. For,
think so? I don't know, man. I think the OLED supply is a little overestimated by people not in the industry.
Well, that would be one reason for Apple to only go with the high-end model for it.
That's what I was thinking. But I don't know, man, because I don't want to buy a 5.5-inch iPhone, and this year I might have to because the
camera
is compelling enough. I mean, it's more than optical image stabilization.
Right. That's exactly what I'm thinking, because you know how much I hate these big phones, but if I want to get, because I love the idea of having a really nice camera on me, and that's really the most exciting upgrade that I get in every year's phone is how much better the camera is. You know, I'm shooting 4K video now and all that. You know, having that big phone kills me, but I could see myself in certain situations wanting to use the big phone for the camera.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried the 6S Plus for, a month or so this past cycle, and I couldn't. It's just too big. It feels like I'm carrying, I mean, it's a phablet, so it feels like I'm carrying not a cell phone with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than a cell phone that I'm taking with me. It's not something that I just pick up and walk out the door with. I don't know. It doesn't fit in my pockets, you know? I wear board
shorts. Do you like the size of the 6S?
Yeah, I mean, I like the screen. I got used to it. It's the format of the SE is perfect for my hand size and pant pocket size and all that good stuff. But I think the benefits of having a larger screen outweigh the negatives of the overall large form factor.
How many Macs do you own?
Including ones I don't use?
Yes.
Like four? Oh, including the one, five maybe?
How many iPhones do you own?
Oh, God. Six or seven maybe.
See, this is what I'm saying, you know, to switch between these devices or to have them available, I don't think would be that crazy of an idea. To make it easier to switch between phones, especially with the watch, I would love to see it this fall. I don't think we're going to see it, unfortunately, but I think they've announced everything they're going to announce, at least with respect to iOS 10 and watchOS. But, I mean, certainly I have a couple Macs. I have a few phones, so yeah.
I'd like to go back and rock the 4S for a while.
I love the design of the SE, and it just feels good in your hand. And it's the shape and size of it are so much so that I don't even feel like I need to use a case with it, whereas I have to put a case on my 6S. You just can't use it one-handed very well. You can't grip it, and that's the main issue for me.
Yeah, and the 6 series design is very slippery with its curved edges and whatnot. Yeah,
There are cases where I could see myself going, yeah, I'd like to have a plus size phone. The camera, you know, if I'm watching video on the go, for example, and I don't want to bring an iPad with me or something, you know, a lot of times I'll be out in the back of a cab or at a restaurant and I'm streaming a sports game. And, you know, that would be a great opportunity to have a bigger screen so you can see more of it. Also, the extra battery life you get from the bigger form factor is great too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are a lot of advantages that even I admit to as somebody who doesn't like big phones. I think I'm in a position where this new phone upgrade coming out this year, you know, if everything that we've heard rumored thus far is all that it is and that's it, I'll probably just return the phone after I review it. I don't really see a need to keep that. But I hate to say stuff like that because I don't know and nothing's been announced and it's just so presumptive and stupid to say that.
Never know, man. The new camera might be so incredible.
I can't Well, especially on the smaller model, the 4.7 inch model, if it doesn't have the dual lens thing. I can't see what kind of an upgrade would be so significant that I would have to keep that phone, especially ditching the headphone jack and all the other concessions and stuff. That's why I think there's got to be some, especially for that 4.7 inch model, you know, if the smart connector and the dual lenses are going to be exclusive to the Plus model, that 4.7, I look at it and it's like, maybe it's a big upgrade if somebody has like a 5S, but for a 6, even, I don't know.
I think a lot of people are going to skip this upgrade.
Well, a lot of people are skipping the 6S upgrade,
which is not good.
That's why sales are down year over year. So,
yeah. Although,
you know, it's a maturing market and not a lot of need for the phone, and tough year over year comparisons and all that. You know, you can make all the excuses you want, but the reality is they're selling less phones than they were last year.
Samsung's phone sales are up. Watch out, guys. One last bit of iPhone rumor. Who was it that reported? Oh, Digitimes reported on the iris scanning technology that is potentially coming in 2018. What do you think about that? I'm kind of dubious that Apple would move away from the tried and true Touch ID. I mean, Touch ID is so great because you don't think about it. It's not something that, it's not like the old fingerprint sensors that you swipe. It's a unconscious decision that you make when you turn on your phone. You turn it on and you're authenticating at the same time. Iris recognition is not at that level yet. You would have to probably hold your phone up to your face. I mean, they've made purchases about, you know, face recognition companies and stuff that could help in this area, but I don't think it's there yet. What do you think?
I mean, the technology isn't there yet, but until somebody takes it there, you know, I mean, you could always say that. I feel like I like this rumor. And the reason I like it is because I don't think it has to replace Touch ID. I think it can be in tandem with it. For example, there might be situations where it can't see your face or your eye, and you want to just use the fingerprint sensor. But vice versa, there could be times where, for example, you're wearing gloves. Anybody who lives anywhere that gets a cold winter knows that. It's a big pain in the butt. You're walking down the street, you want to use your phone, you got to take off your gloves, your hands are freezing, blah, blah, blah. So this is one of those things where it makes a lot of sense. You could integrate this into Macs. You could integrate this into iPads and watches and everything else. Imagine an Apple TV with some sort of a camera that did that too. And this is technology that Apple's been interested in for a while. When the first iPad was being worked on back in 2010 before it was released, one of the earlier prototypes of it they toyed around with was a device that recognized your face and automatically presented your content to you when you picked it up. It was seen by Apple as something that would be one device for the whole family. As you said, the technology was not there, and so they ended up just not doing it. But they continue to be interested in that future and that idea, and that is why they've purchased these facial recognition companies and that sort of stuff. And they presumably behind the scenes are still working toward that. So I think some sort of facial, iris, whatever, secure recognition is an inevitability. Whether it comes out 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you know, we will see. But I don't think that it necessarily has to replace Touch ID. I think it can be used in tandem with it and make for a very compelling and convenient use case.
How long until we get the stories about your phone is watching you?
I mean, don't we already have them?
Well, I mean, even more so. We don't really see that much about Apple. I mean, they're so high on the high horse with their customer privacy stuff. We don't really.
I mean, you can get a Samsung phones now and stuff that'll unlock with your face. That's like one of those features of Android, I think, actually. It's built into the operating system, but it's not terribly secure.
Yeah. Also, I'm not really sure. I know that everyone's iris is unique, but what kind of resolution do you need to see the differences? I feel like it would, you know, the regular cameras on an iPhone probably won't be able to discern those minor differences.
Well, and potentially you could have you know, one of the rumors about next year's phone is that the OLED screen is going to hide the camera, the FaceTime camera behind it. Mm-hmm. you could, in theory, have more complex camera arrays included in the phone, you know, because for aesthetic purposes, you may not want that now. But if they could hide it behind the screen and have small enough components, potentially they could do something like that.
Yeah, the per-pixel technology of OLED really opens the door to a whole bunch of new possibilities. I remember there was a patent that Apple had. I think it was like a... I think the pixels in the display also doubled as light sensors, which were, you know, basically cameras. So it had like all these, the screen itself was a camera. It didn't hide a camera. Every pixel in the display was part of the camera. So it was,
that's awesome.
It's kind of like blowing up like a CMOS sensor to the scale of like a 5.5 inch display. So I could see that. That'd be interesting.
But Victor and I talked about this a few weeks ago, where if you're talking to somebody and you look just to the left or to the right of their eyes, like in person, you can tell, even though you might only be looking, 6 inches to the left of their face, people can tell, even from a distance. And it's kind of disconcerting. And you have that same thing with technology now, whether you're on a Mac or you're on an iPhone or whatever. It's very personal. But when you're doing a FaceTime call, you're still looking just above their head, below, in the case of the camera, the little below where the camera is. And that seems like a very Apple thing to do to address that issue and to put the camera in the screen where you're looking so that you're looking right at the person when you talk to them. That's that level of human intimacy that Apple is always trying to achieve, and that seems like a very Apple thing to do.
Yeah, well, personally, I look through people when I talk to them, so... Yeah. No, but yeah, I see what you're saying. It's definitely something they would want to...
Not just for an aesthetic reason, for a communication reason, for personal...
They want that connection, man.
Yeah, definitely. That's something I could see them doing, and I would not be surprised... the rumor is it'll be in next year's phone, and that would not surprise me at all.
Shifting gears, no pun intended, to Apple Car. There's a couple reports this week on Apple's Project Titan, the first being Apple bringing Bob Mansfield back into the fold to potentially help out with their automotive initiative. So Mansfield's been out of the picture for... since what, 2012 or after 2012, when he announced that he was leaving, or stepping down from his post as as a hardware chief. Now he's back. Has he been gone this whole time, or has he just been kind of floating around Cupertino helping here and there? I think he was an advisor, right, to Tim Cook.
Yeah, he's had an interesting trajectory where. He announced his retirement. It did not go over well internally. This was back in 2012. Apple really kind of assessed the situation and said, well, we can't have this. So they apparently threw a boatload of cash at Mansfield to keep him around. He came back like 3 months later as an advisor to Tim Cook. He's no longer a part of the executive team, but he has been with Apple in some mysterious capacity. For the last 4 or so years, there's some belief that, he's had hands in products that have come along, including the Apple Watch. And in a shakeup of the personnel on the so-called Project Titan team, Mansfield is said to have been handed the keys, so to speak, to the project as of this year. And then you pair that with the news that was broken today that the former CEO of QNX, BlackBerry's operating system maker, gentleman by the name of Dan Dodge, was also hired by Apple, which is a big deal because this is a guy who knows a thing or two and pretty much wrote the book on these integrated operating systems that run in devices like cars and stuff like that. So the team is kind of coming together, and it seems like in the last few months the rumors have been more focused on the software and development side of it than on the actual physical building of a car. And one of the things that was presented today was Apple can keep their options open by focusing on the software side of it by potentially maybe partnering with a manufacturer and being the brains in their car rather than building their own. I believe the expectation is Apple wants to own the whole kit and will want to build the car as well, but that's a very difficult thing to do considering the cost that has to go into it and the decades of experience that automakers have that Apple would have to catch up on. But people said the same thing about a watch too, and here we are.
It's a little different though. It's a heavy industry and I don't know, a smartwatch is kind of in Apple's wheelhouse, right? It's a portable computer. Car is not a... However much tech analysts say that a car is basically a computer on wheels, it's not. It's a heavy industry that, you know, these companies have hundreds of years of collective experience. Some have over 100 years themselves in making automobiles, and it's not really something that you just step into. You can throw a bunch of cash at it, you can hire the best, but until you get a product out there, see how it's received, get it, you know, road tested and all that kind of good stuff, it's just not,
right.
It's incredibly difficult.
This thing before it ships, it's going to have to be pre-announced at a level that Apple has never done before. You think about the iPhone, it was announced in January of 2007, it launched that June. You think about the iPad, it was announced in January and launched, I think, March. You look at the Apple Watch, it was announced in September, didn't launch till the next April.
Right.
You're with a product like this, to have it, as you said, road tested, to have the certifications, to have the, you're talking about a self-driving vehicle. This isn't something you can just throw on the road. There's permits and all kinds of extensive testing that have to be done. And that can't be done, you know, hidden in a van, a mapping van or something. Right. This is something that is going to have to be pre-announced potentially years in advance in order to get all the proper permitting and stuff to get to market, I believe.
Right. And also, I think it's people vastly underestimate the work that goes into a car. It's not just an engine and, you know, a drivetrain. I mean, these things are platforms that a lot of companies use for 20 or more years on the same car. They change the skin of it, but the underlying mechanics are largely the same. Like, you know, Ford's Fox platform. They used that. They no longer use it, but they used it, for I don't know how many years, 20 years. These things are huge investments, and they take not only years of aftermarket tweaking and stuff, but they work on these things for decades, and then they launch the platform, and then they use it for another couple decades. And it's not something that you just cycle every year.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here. Yeah. When you're reviewing a car, testing a car, driving a car, reading about a car, whatever, what do people talk about? They talk about the handling.
Ugh.
They talk about the smoothness of the ride. They talk about the acceleration.
This is the 0-60 argument that I, oh God.
But that's a big deal. How does the car feel when it's accelerating, when it's braking, when it's turning? Those are so the car becomes an extension of you, between your feet and your hands, the control of it and all that. There's a feeling on a car, whether it's low to the ground to give you a sense of speed or high up to make you feel safe on the road in your big SUV or whatever. So much of that stuff won't apply with a self-driving Apple car. The user experience becomes completely different because you're not the one controlling the wheel. And, maybe we're getting too far ahead of ourselves here because for the foreseeable future, you're going to have to remain behind the wheel for safety purposes. But, there's eventually going to be a day where not only does the car drive itself, but it'll be illegal for you to drive a car because the robots will be safer than we are,
Yeah.
But I think that is a big part of it, that existing car companies maybe don't have the expertise that Apple has in terms of a user experience, and an area where they could potentially shake up the market in big ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that would be a thing, wouldn't it?
It's a completely different experience if you're not driving.
Yeah. I look forward to that day. Although, I don't know.
100 years from now, it'll be a novelty to be able to go somewhere and drive a car. And it'll be like a closed-off area, like bumper cars or something.
It's going to be like Demolition Man. They're going to have the old gas guzzler done.
And Taco Bell wins the food wars.
Exactly. But also, interesting to see people walk back their predictions on Apple Car hardware and kind of saying, you know, hey, we always said that they were working on car software and only maybe hardware.
I cannot see a situation where Apple is making the brains for multiple manufacturers of cars. Maybe one company, but I mean the marriage between, especially in something like a self-driving car, I mean, geez, this is not like a removable brain that you can just plug into a car and make it work. There are so many factors here at play that it would make it very difficult for Apple to, you know, be the brains in a Ford and a Maserati, you know, like it's a completely different market. It's a completely different. I think that if they were going to partner with another company, you know, say BMW or whatever, it would be that would be the partnership and that would be it.
Yeah, kind of like Google, right? I mean, that's kind of the road they're trying to go down. Although they have multiple irons in the fire at this point with their Google car. But
yeah, the partnership doesn't make a lot of sense for many reasons, but as you said, just the hundreds of years of collective experience of automobile making that Apple does not have, that, and going beyond the things we were talking about in terms of the experience, but the actual functionality and reliability of the vehicle. I mean, you know, modern cars are pretty great in terms of how infrequently they break down and how infrequently you blow a tire, but it still does happen.
That is most definitely true. Well, that about wraps it up for this week. That was episode 79 of the Apple Insider Podcast. Again, with me this week was Neil Hughes, Managing Editor. You can find him at appleinsider.com and follow his ramblings on Twitter at ThisIsNeil. I'm Mikey Campbell. I can also be found on appleinsider.com. As for Twitter, you can find me at MikeyCampbell81. Have a good one.